Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at how we can stay injury-free during travel and in the winter and deal with those aches and pains and sprains and strains that sometimes hit us this time of the year. Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And he's also a senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Our guest today with me in the studio, Bill. Good to see you again. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Likewise, and to all our listeners, happy holidays to everybody, and good to be back.
Yeah, Lori Tyne Brody normally would be with us, but she's with us in spirit and by phone. Let's put it that way, because she's not feeling so good.
Yep, one of those nasty viruses that's going around hit me yesterday, and I'm still recovering today, but I can still talk.
Hey, your voice sounds good, Lori.
Yeah, and Bill is sitting in your seat.
Oh,
okay. Oh, Larry, we're supposed to tell her that. I'm in trouble now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I tell you what, the number, we have callers online already. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And callers online, so I say let's just go right to the phones. And Jeremiah in Madison, we are on to you. Hi, Jeremiah. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey, before this thought gets lost, too, I want to mention how much I enjoy the show. And I often don't catch much of it because I'm driving on short errands and I'll get little bits and pieces. But I always learn something about therapies or how to take care of yourself and so forth. So good program.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for that.
Listen, I'll mention I had an injury in June or July of this year. I was using a power mower at a cabin in a brushy, grassy sort of situation. It was not a lawn, and I was pushing the mower in ways that the mower was not really designed to be used and overworking myself in the process. So then I finished. I kind of got it through there, opening up these paths, but I ended up with a mild pain in the rib cage on the left side. And as I say, it's a mild pain, nothing sharp. It's sort of diffuse. It's been with me now for several months. And I've had this kind of thing occur in the past when I've been snorkeling and free diving or doing a little boogie boarding when I was on vacation. Mm-hmm. It's like any time the chest gets a sort of expansion and an unusual demand on it, I can get this rib condition. It feels like tissue between the ribs or behind the ribs, and I don't know the anatomy real well. But, it's not near the sternum. It's not that kind of thing. Sort of the background is I'm 65 years old. I'm 6 foot tall and quite lightly built. I struggle to keep 125 pounds on my frame. And I'm in pretty good condition because I swim regularly, I walk, I've got a lot of activities. But I know for a fact that, you know, my chest and my upper body is somewhat deconditioned because I'm in an office job and it's on the New Year's resolutions list to do something about this.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, 5-6 months is a long time. So, Jeremiah, it's not in the front of your chest by your sternum. Is it back by your shoulder blade, or is it on the side?
No, it's low on the rib cage. It's low and diffuse, sort of across that area, very much up in the front. One of the things I've done is when I have to do something like, well, we'll have shoveling coming up or, you know, I have to lift something, I'll take some tape and I'll put it from the lower area of the back and up across the ribs toward the sternum. And that helps to keep everything in place. Mm-hmm. And that feels like that's been really protective when I've done that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good strategy. And Lori, I mean, chime in here as well. It sounds like most likely it's some sort of a soft tissue injury. The abdominals attached to the area that I believe that you're describing. And the abdominals, they don't get much rest. We're doing anything with exertion, anything with our arms. those muscles are working and pulling on that rib cage. You know, the fact that it's been 5 or 6 months and it's still there with that kind of activity, I think it'd be worthwhile you going and being seen, you know, even just evaluated by a therapist who can, you know, can examine you, look at the rib cage itself in terms of mobility, do some muscle testing, and see exactly which muscles may be involved. And so they can help you short term, one, get rid of this, but then, you know, as part of your message here was, what can you do to prevent this from recurring again? And so there may be some specific core strengthening for you or some upper body strengthening, that can augment the swimming and other physical activity that you're doing. But, you know, most soft tissue injuries, they go away within 4 weeks, 6 weeks. The fact that this has been months, and you're still taping to help protect it, it's probably worthwhile being seen.
Yeah, it may be an issue that at the load that you're placing on your rib cage during your usual daily activities doesn't tax it enough until you get to a higher intensity where you really place a demand on it. And so you may have those muscles trained up to a certain level where they can handle usual daily activities and even your swimming, but they're not conditioned to the point where they can handle the higher loads.
Yeah.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you. Yep.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Reagan in Fox Lake, it is your turn. Hi, Reagan.
Hi. My issue is with the arches of my feet.
Okay.
Okay.
I walk around outside on, you know, grass and just slightly uneven terrain, and when I do that, my arches get really sore. I've tried arch supports; they didn't really do anything. They didn't really help. I didn't feel.
Okay. Hmm. Lori, what do you think?
How long has that been going on?
Probably about 5 months, off and on.
Okay, and do you know what started it? I mean, has it been this way all your life, or
no? It's relatively recent. I couldn't put a finger on anything particular that started it.
Okay, and it's both feet?
Yes.
Any change in your shoe wear?
No.
Okay, and it's only when you walk on uneven surfaces. If you walk, you could go out and walk on a flat surface for a long distance and it wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
Okay, and is the walking on uneven surfaces a new activity for you?
I've been doing it more frequently.
Okay. Because of a change in your work, or?
Yeah.
Okay. So the frequency of this kind of walking has increased.
Yes.
And when it hurts all through your arch or in a specific spot?
All through my arch.
Okay. And then what does it take for it to go away?
Probably about an hour of rest.
An hour of rest, and then it's fine again?
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly an unusual symptom. There are some conditions. Do you have a history of ankle sprains?
No.
Okay. All right. It could be that there's some anatomical variations in your foot where your midfoot doesn't have the flexibility it's supposed to have, and so it has difficulty accommodating to uneven surfaces. And it may be, it's something that you're usually born with. And it could be that you never put enough of a demand on them where the symptoms arose. But now that you're walking on uneven surfaces more often, it could be that this syndrome has flared. It could also just be a simple overuse problem in that the shoes you're wearing aren't providing enough support, even with your arch supports, to accommodate to the uneven surfaces, and you're overworking all the small little muscles in your feet that have to accommodate to unusual surfaces. So I'd say, given how long it's been going on, it'd probably be worthwhile to go in and have your feet looked at, and they can check for some of the strength of the intrinsic muscles of your feet. They can look at your foot anatomy to see if there's any reason why you're predisposed to this kind of a problem. And if there are some specific strengthening exercises you can do to accommodate to uneven surfaces. There are different tools that we use to train people to strengthen their feet on uneven surfaces, different balls and foams and things like that. And that might be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Reagan, this is Bill. I would bring in, if you still have them, the art supports that you had tried, and so the therapist can take a look at those. And I don't know if these were over-the-counter art supports or if they were individually designed for you.
Drugstore.
Okay. Well, and that's a good place to start. But take those in, and it may be, especially if you're going to be continue to walk on uneven surfaces, that you know orthotics that are designed specifically for your feet may end up making a huge difference for you. The other thing to bring in is if there are certain shoes that you typically wear at work, you know, at least bring those along with you so the therapist can look at those too.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
I have a kind of a somewhat related question from Trish, wondering if you guys could recommend a good supportive shoe for someone with plantar fasciitis who has to stand all day on the job.
Oh, well, you know, I guess there's not a quick answer to that. And you really have to find a shoe that fits your foot. So something that provides support for your arch, but looking at the rest of your foot anatomy, there's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. What's most important is changing your position when you're at work. If you can get a high stool and sit for part of your job and get off of your feet for part of it, but something that provides good support for your foot. And then if you have if you're standing in one spot, a cushion mat that provides some shock absorption when you're standing on it. And then that should be coupled with, obviously, stretching and icing and things like that that are done at home. Right. And if when you take a break you can ice the arches would be useful as well. But there are some good stores that can sit down and look at you and look at your foot anatomy, and help you pick a shoe that fits your foot well.
Yeah, and Trish may have tried this as well. In addition to the really good supportive footwear, is there are some heel inserts that are designed to keep pressure off the pressure point that we have with plantar fasciitis. So it's almost like a little donut, and there's mm-hmm. more pressure on the outside of the heel, and there's less pressure right where that plantar fascia attaches to the calcaneus, the heel bone. And so sometimes that can help, but you know, that can help get through the day, but to try to get rid of this, it's like Lori mentioned, it's the stretching and the icing and maybe a night splint mm-hmm. to kind of get over that hump.
And we have a follow-up to a previous caller. I think it's kind of important to mention. A caller wanted to say that the 65-year-old man, the tall fellow with the only weighing 125 mm-hmm. pounds, with shoulder pain should also make sure that it isn't a cardiac issue. His symptoms could also be caused by that.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked him location and asked, was it around his shoulder blade or near the spine? But my impression was it was more toward the front and the bottom of the rib cage. But this follow-up caller is correct. That's why and that's why I think why Jeremy mentioned it wasn't near his sternum either, that heart pain is not always the left side of the chest into the left arm to the small finger. It can be around the shoulder blades or between the shoulder blades or upper abdominal area. So it's good to know. But my impression was it was in a different location than that.
Okay. We have lots of callers online. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. As we visit with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our physical therapists, who come by every month to talk with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. Taking a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains here with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Thanks for listening in today. Martha in Kearney has a question for you, too, so let's go to her. Hi, Martha.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Billy, I love all your shows. They're all good. They're all informative. And I know this one really helps a lot of people. Well, I'll tell you what happened to me. I'm 73 years old, and I'm pretty active. I'm not, you know, an old lady that's going to fall down. I came around my cupboard, and I fell. I hit my cupboard, that kind of the picket side, and my elbow got, you know, damaged a little bit. I got a bad bruise there. But, you know, the thing of it is about, I'd say about 10 days later, my upper shoulder started to bother me so bad. And now it's really getting to be problematic, and I'm trying to decide whether I need a good physical therapist or an x-ray, because it's going down into the other parts of my arm, And it's just the weirdest thing. I mean, if I would have damaged my shoulder, you would have think that that would have, you know, started up right away. Mm-hmm. So I can't figure out what I, yeah, what I did.
Bill, what do you think?
And so you fell 10 days ago or more than 10 days ago,
yeah,
Martha?
Yeah, about I'm trying to figure out about a week to 10 days, yeah.
Okay. And then the pain in your arm, is it sharp pain, dull ache?
It's my range of motion is very much affected. I can't do it because it's just painful.
Okay.
And then now I notice if I'm really careful not to lift too much with that arm because it goes down into my fingers a little bit too.
Okay. Yeah. You know,
you think I just bruised something?
Well, it's possible, but the fact you have that much difficulty lifting your arm, I mean, you could have injured the rotator cuff. There's potential for a fracture. The other thing that I would want you to be examined for is your neck. Most of this may be coming from your neck and not your shoulder.
No kidding.
But I'd recommend going and see your medical doctor. They can examine your shoulder. They can examine your neck. They can consider taking, you know, an X-ray of that shoulder and make sure that there isn't any kind of fracture. But with what you described, it's very easy to injure your rotator cuff.
Is it really?
Yes.
Yeah. Typically, that was the first thing that came to my mind, is that you injured your rotator cuff, and sometimes it takes a while for that to show up. Typically, mm-hmm. rotator cuff pain will refer down to your elbow, but doesn't usually go past your elbow. So I agree with Bill. This is probably equally as likely coming from your neck. And
really?
That pain will go, pain that starts at your neck will go all the way down to your hand.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So I think you need to have this evaluated so you can figure out where it's coming from.
But, you know, I did have some discomfort in my neck, too, when I took that fall.
Yeah.
So it could be.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Good luck. Ron in the town of Dunn, we are turning to you next. Hi, Ron.
Good morning.
Morning.
For the last 2 years, had an increasing problem with my balance. And it finally got to the point where I was at risk of falling if I was going up or down stairs that had no handrail. And I sought medical advice about it recently. Had an MRI of my head done. The initial diagnosis was possible hydrocephalus, but I saw a neurosurgeon, and he ruled that out and suggested I seek help from a physical therapist and begin an exercise program. My question is, are there physical therapists who specialize in balance problems, and if so, how do I find them?
Yeah, good question. The answer is yes. There are physical therapists who do specialize in balance issues, and oftentimes they have specialty equipment to really give details of what's the source of the balance and how best to address that. What I would do is contact the hospital, or if there's a physical therapy clinic that is close to you logistically.
She's in Dane County, so.
In Dane County.
I'm just south of Madison.
Oh, okay. Well, I know the major hospitals here in town. I'm not sure which insurance you have.
Physicians Plus.
Okay. All right. So you have choices in going to Meritor or to UW. If you contact the physical therapy department in either one of these facilities and describe that you need, you're coming for a balance problem and that you want to see the specialists, and they should be able to refer you to the particular clinic that has all the equipment that you would want to have available to you.
Hmm.
So there are specialty areas in physical therapy with balance, and they do a detailed exam and come up with a program specific for you.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. That helps.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Ellen in Waupun. Are we on to you? Are we on to you? Oh, looks like we have a little problem with our server right now. Let's see. Can we try it once more? No. Not working. it'll work eventually here. We've got an email from Carol. Let's go there. Carol from Wisconsin Rapids. Curious to know whether carpal tunnel ever improves with night splinting only, or perhaps just time. I was diagnosed with it last spring after snow shoveling season, and it hasn't really improved. Does it come down to surgery being the only option for improvement? I've heard many horror stories about surgery and would like to avoid it.
Well, yeah, typically we want to avoid surgery. That's usually the last stop for everyone. Yes, it can get better with night slimps and activity modification, you know, some therapy to work on range of motion and working with someone to find appropriate ergonomic tools to decrease stress on the wrist. All those things are conservative interventions that work pretty well for carpal tunnel. You know, the bottom line is you get to a point where you say, this is impairing my lifestyle too much, and I've done all the conservative measures that are available, and so I'm going to go and have surgery. And, you know, I every day I hear people say, well, I've heard horror stories about, you know, fill in the blank. Well, those are the ones you hear. You hear the horror stories. You know, people don't always share their successful stories. So, you know, I would visit with the surgeon, get a couple of opinions before you decide to go ahead with it. And it's one of those things where basically they say, you'll know when you're ready. When the potential benefits of the surgery in your mind outweigh the risks, that's the time to have it done.
And Carol doesn't provide us if she's had physical therapy or not over the past 8-9 months either. And so, besides, in addition to getting the surgical consult to see what they can offer, seeing a physical therapist, the fact that it's been around for 8-9 months, most likely it's not going to go away quickly.
No.
And probably will take more than a night splint at this point in time. But addressing strength and flexibility, besides the workstation, how Carol's using her hands, I mean, probably would need to be a kind of a multiple direction treatment program to turn this around for her.
Let's go to Tony in Mount Horeb next. Tony, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, folks. About 4 weeks ago, I fell off a 10-foot roof, had a pelvic fracture. It was classified as LC2, which I guess is lateral compression. One, I should say, LC1. Minimally displaced fractures. And so I was on 2 weeks of non-weight-bearing walker crutches and saw the ortho guy. Took a film and was ruled to be healing. I would heal up. Weight bearing is tolerated now. PT's been here 3 times, doing a lot laying and standing exercises, and still have this kind of nagging groin, inguinal, dull, sharp if I push it too much pain. If I squat with squat, for instance, too far down or do too much of abduction, is that going to be persistent for a while? I'm down to one crutch now. And just for old balance and get the control any pain.
Right. Well, it sounds like your things are healing, but you know, besides the bony fractures, Tony, there also could have been some soft tissue injury as well. And so, you know, there's no reason to think that these symptoms won't go away over time, but it could be 4, 6, or even 8 weeks before you feel like you can put all the weight on that leg and you feel steady on that leg.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming the therapist is going to come back again to work with you. Is that correct?
No, she's kind of discharged me last week and said, you know, this is probably going to go on through the winter, and as you get more active, you can kind of DC to, you know, once a day on the laying and standing exercises, but don't plan on being pretty much normal until the snow is gone again.
Okay. All right. Do you have access to a pool by chance, a swing pool anywhere?
No, not really, but that would be take some of the weight off of it, obviously.
Yes. Well, it would take weight off the pelvis and that hip area, allow you to probably do a lot more exercise, walking. And then as you improve, even starting to jump or run a little bit, I think would help carry over to a land-based program. You know, that's probably a medium where you can do the greatest amount of physical activity without stirring things up too much.
Sure. How do I know when I can get rid of the other crutch? She made it sound like, well, when you feel like it's more of a hindrance than a help, really. You feel like you're just carrying it around.
Yeah, as a general rule, I want people to get rid of the sharp pain. I think that sharp pain needs to be gone.
Okay.
You know, because when that hits, sometimes and the muscles shut off, and the last thing you need is another fall. And so I would, you know, you can use it less and less, even though it's underneath your arm. You know, you can kind of adjust how much weight you're putting on your leg, and I would gradually put more and more weight on it. But, you know, especially when you're outdoors, you know, I would use it until that sharp pain is gone. And if, you know, and if another 3-4 weeks goes by and that sharp pain is still there, then it's probably worthwhile going back and seeing the orthopedic doc and just make sure that this is okay as part of the healing process.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Ellen in Waupun, turning to you next. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have an issue in my left foot that has been, it started this summer, late summer, and it feels like there's something underneath the skin in the pad of the foot toward the third or fourth toe in that area. And I walk frequently, and so I've had to pad that area just to be able to handle it. And I'm just wondering what that might be.
So it's underneath the metatarsal arch, closer to your toes and the ball of your foot?
Yes.
Okay. And are you getting any other symptoms besides just that pain, like there's something underneath your skin?
Well, sometimes it'll become like a burning sensation
okay.
in there.
Okay. And you didn't step on anything, to your knowledge.
No.
Okay, because that does happen where people don't realize they stepped on a small piece of glass or something, and it gets embedded in their foot, and they don't even know it's there. It sounds more likely like a neuroma, especially for getting a burning sensation, because that is one of the neurologic symptoms that we see. Sometimes you might note some tingling or other sensation losses. But you could be developing a neuroma in between the joints there and the ball of your foot. That's a relatively common place for that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some conservative interventions they can do for that with some arch supports and a metatarsal pad to open up those spaces between those balls and give a little more room for that. So I would go in and I would have this looked at, especially since you are a regular walker. What tends to happen is people subtly modify how they walk, and then they end up with pain someplace else.
You are so right.
Yeah. So this is something that's really important to you, I would go in and have it looked at, get a definitive diagnosis, and get started on a good management program so you can continue your exercise.
Okay, thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Fred in Minong, what's on your mind?
Well, I got a couple of questions. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas as you celebrate our Lord's birth.
To you as well.
I have a couple of questions. I heard your one caller mention that they stand a lot on the job, and I've heard that it is so vitally important that when you do stand a lot that you distribute your weight equally and not stand with your weight concentrated on one leg or the other. And my second question is, I have friends that, fortunately, I'm not worried about my height. I'm 6 foot, but some people that are short buy these inserts that they put in the heels of their shoes. And God knows we weren't born with those inserts in there, and I wonder if they could be detrimental.
All right.
What kind of inserts do you mean?
Well, they have a kind of a plastic foam insert simply made to increase the height of the person wearing them.
To increase their height?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard of people doing that just to appear taller, but it's not unlike wearing a high heel. And what it does is it changes the biomechanics of how your foot works. And it can be detrimental in the long run because it changes the weight-bearing pattern on the bottom of your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And theoretically, over time, it could become a problem, just like wearing high heels for long periods of time can become a problem as well.
Yeah. And for the, Fred, your first question about people who stand a lot and equal weight on both legs, that is ideal. Instead of putting all your weight or most weight on one leg for hour after hour, if you're on your feet a lot, it's best to change and alter your position. So shifting your weight from one leg to the other leg. It's also good if your workstation allows to have one foot in front of the other instead of your feet underneath your shoulders, but more, you know, front and back. That allows you to keep your back in more of a neutral or middle position. The other thing that can help, if it's available, is when people stand to have their foot up on a rung of some sort. Sometimes those are underneath tables or some power equipment. There's a place to put your foot up and then alternate the left foot to right foot. But generally, equal weight. But again, after enough hours, even that gets old to the muscles and joints of the feet and the legs.
See, I got into your station a little bit late, and I'm not sure whether you're talking basically just about feet or whether you're talking about all joints in general.
Can talk about other things, too, Fred.
Because I have a knee that goes out of joint about 10 times or more a day, and I had an MRI, and they said that the cartilage is breaking up in there, and I don't know exactly what an orthopedist can do about that, whether they remove the cartilage or give a knee replacement. What do they usually do in those cases?
Well, it depends upon the severity of the cartilage loss. You know, they wait and do the knee replacement as the last step in it. But prior to that, sometimes they'll go in and they'll clean out the cartilage if you have little fragments that are getting caught in your knee, and that's what's causing your knee to lock up or go out. They can go in and flush some of those out, and that can help. Sometimes if you have a leg that's very bowed-legged or the other direction, a lot of valgus, they will go in and they'll do a realignment. If you have a meniscus that's torn, sometimes they'll go in and trim that up. So there are a number of different steps they can go through prior to doing the knee replacement to try to prolong the life of your existing knee. Yep. Depending upon the severity, sometimes they'll do a series of injections of something called Synvisc that acts as kind of a lubricant. For some people, that buys them more time. They'll do any of a number of things to buy more time before the knee replacement, and your doctor should be able to give you information on those different alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you, Fred, for calling. Appreciate it. Barb in Mazo. Your turn. Hi, Barb.
Oh, Larry, one of your favorites. You are one of my favorite people to listen to.
Well, thank you.
And I listen to the radio with your station for years now, and it's always been wonderful to listen to.
Well, thank you.
I have severe problems in my joints. In 1988, they replaced my right hip with a device. They went to 90, and I had to have the left hip replaced. And then in 93, my right knee was replaced, but the doctor did not do it right, and it's been crooked ever since. Mm. I've gone through some more replacements now, replacing some of the older parts, and I am still waiting. It's 18 years now for my right knee replacement, and I'm concerned because it's painful now, very painful. And several doctors already, orthopedic surgeons, have said they were not going to be able to do it because of all the risks, because I guess it's crooked or something in the joint, the way that was originally done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm had a bone scan about a month ago at Meritor, and I'm left with the doctor saying, let's wait for a few more months and see what happens. I'm in pain all the time with that knee, which, you know, I'd love to get rid of.
Sure.
But my body is so torn apart from all these different things that have happened. And I spent 2008 and 9 in and out of surgery for a right hip replacement, and they did get infected, and I had to have it taken out, the whole hip joint, and replaced. And it's just been a crazy life, going on 80 next year, and you know, getting old, and everything else is kind of worn out. But if I could get someone to take this knee and do something with it, I would be so happy, because it affects my walking, it affects my foot.
Mm.
I have a crooked foot now that I have to have, you know,
yeah.
I can't afford special shoes. So
Well, we should let's see what Lori has to say, Barbara.
Well, Barbara, it sounds like you've been through a tremendous amount with all of these joint replacements, and you know, while you're rehabilitating one, then the other one starts to go because it's not being used or it's being overused. It just starts this cyclical thing. Have you been in a pool to exercise at all?
I tried that once last summer. They were doing some therapy on me, and I was able to go in the pool once.
Okay, but, and how was that?
That did work fine, but, you know, I didn't go back to therapy because I had to have more surgery this summer on my shoulder.
Oh, well, it might be time to go back. In terms of all the things that I think about that therapy could do for you, given the multitude of problems you've had and joints that you have that are bad, the pool really is the ideal place for you because you can get in and unweight those joints and still exercise, and you can walk without putting all the weight on that right knee and your right foot. So you can still continue to be active to keep your muscles strong so that they can support your joints. You know, what tends to happen is because your joints are so bad, then your muscles get weak because it hurts to try to strengthen them. But the pool is one place you can do that.
Thank you very much for calling, and good luck. Appreciate your call, Barbara. And I want to give Rose a chance in Menominee Falls to visit. Rose, hi.
Hi there. Just about exactly a month ago, I fell, and my right knee seemed to take the brunt of it. I had a scrape and a scab and just a minor bruise on the front of the knee. But on the side, the inside of the knee has been hurting ever since, and I don't know whether... There's no swelling. I didn't know whether to put ice or a brace or if I have to have it x-rayed, or I'm not sure what to do about it.
Is that where the bruise was?
I'm sorry. What was that again, Lori?
Is that where the bruise was? You said on the inside of your knee and then you had
no,
a bruise?
No, the bruise and the scrape were on the front top of the knee.
Okay, so you fell and landed right on the front of your knee?
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't notice any swelling. When do you feel this pain on the inside of your knee?
I feel it almost all the time. I feel it more when I put weight on it. It isn't particularly tender to touch. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't, like if I push on it or something, that doesn't seem to hurt it anymore.
Okay, good.
Seems whatever it is, it's inside maybe.
Right, right. And is it getting better, getting worse, or staying the same?
It's probably getting worse.
Okay. Well, then you need to go in and have it looked at. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always an outside chance that you had some kind of a fracture there, a hairline fracture or something. But typically, those would be pretty tender to touch right over the bone.
Right.
And typically, that would be where you impacted, you know, not in the front of your knee, be in the location of your bruise where you impacted. Mm-hmm. Chances are that that you stirred up some underlying arthritis that's on the inside of your knee.
Yeah, I have a lot of arthritis.
Yeah, yeah, and it may be that you just need a little physical therapy, a few other interventions to get that calm back down again. But since it's getting worse, I'd get in sooner before things start to really fall apart.
Does it require an x-ray first?
Your practitioner will examine you and decide if they think you need an x-ray. You know,
okay.
They'll look to where you're tender. If you're tender along the joint line, probably not. If they find a really tender spot right on the bone, they might want to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's necessary at this point, given what you've told me.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault are physical therapists, our guests here, and they'll be with us right up until 12:30 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Net as we talk about dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, our guests today. And you can join in. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We had an email from Lenny in Madison, his arthritis in his right knee, and wondering if there are certain things to look for when buying a treadmill.
Ooh. I guess my advice would be, if you have arthritis in your knee, the first thing you want to make sure is that you're going to be able to tolerate a weight-bearing activity, such as a treadmill. So, you know, I would first, if I could, you know, get one of those 30-day gym memberships that they offer specials on, especially at the end of the year, and go to a gym for 30 days and see if you like doing the treadmill, see if the if that works for you, how your knee responds. And typically a gym will have different varieties of treadmills, and he can see what things he likes about them and what things he doesn't. Typically the less expensive treadmills will be harder and firmer, and that's going to be harder on your knee. The more expensive ones have more cushion on them, which are going to be better for an arthritic knee. So, you know, I'd look for one that has a lot of cushion. But again, before I go make that investment, I'd want to make sure that a treadmill is something that's going to work for me.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. It's like, you know, a mattress. What's the best mattress? If you can get one that you can try for a month and bring it back, if it doesn't fit you, that's the ideal. The other thing with the treadmill, besides the degree of cushion, is some have armrests where you can support yourself a little bit. They all have a rung at the front that you could hold on to, but if you have the armrest on off to the side, then you can modify your weight a little bit while you're on the treadmill. But again, if Lenny can get to a health club, he can try them with an armrest, without an armrest, as well as the cushioning.
Ellen in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I was diagnosed last week with arthritis at the base of my thumb. I guess it's pretty common, they tell me. It's especially in women. I'm otherwise young and healthy. I was hoping it wasn't some arthritic condition, but they tell me it was. They prescribed a splint for my thumb to wear for activity, and then I also have some carpal tunnel component, I guess, so I have a night splint for that. Anything else I can do? This isn't debilitating. It's just annoying, and I want it to be gone.
Yeah.
Well, I'd certainly get in to see a hand therapist. There are physical therapists who are hand therapists. There are occupational therapists who are hand therapists. And just meet with them for a visit or two to get ideas on exercises to help keep your muscles strong in that area, because we tend to disuse them, to work around them, and then you get some muscle atrophy, and that makes it worse. They can also talk to you about ergonomic tools and positioning and things like that to help decrease the loads and stress on those joints. So you'll probably come away with some really useful tips about hand position, functioning, gripping, and ergonomic tools. Because that's going to be what causes the wear and tear on it over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Is this your dominant hand?
Yes.
Yeah. And are you in a fairly hand-dominant type of work?
Not particularly.
Okay. All right. So you're not a potter or something like that.
I'm a nurse.
Oh, you're a nurse. Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, I'd get in and I'd see a hand therapist for a couple of visits and just find out ways to decrease the stress on that, whether your avocation is gardening or something else around the home, or even your kitchen tools, to decrease stress and loads on that joint, because every little bit is going to add up over a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Okay? All right. Thank you very much for calling. Mike in Oshkosh, on to you. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. See, I recently had my right knee scoped, and probably from past sports injuries, but the surgeon said he found a lot of arthritis in there, too, and I've got aches and pains all over. When you get to be 65, you don't know if it's due to age or past abuses of your body, but I had severe case of Lyme disease years ago, and I'm curious if this is a contributing factor. No one at the hospital, but one of my friends said, oh, is that because of your Lyme's? And I'm wondering if Lyme's can be retested, or if once you've had it, the antibodies are prevalent, so you can't retest. I know this is a little bit outside of your scope.
You can't retest, I don't think.
Oh, Well, are you still? Oh, so you're still symptomatic in a number of areas.
Well, it's just kind of achy.
Just kind of achy. Yeah, boy. You know, that is a tough call. That is a tough call. You know, there are Lyme specialists. And do you feel like you were treated successfully for it when you had it many years ago? Were you on antibiotics? And?
Well, I was treated with oral antibiotics on two separate occasions and then 21 days of IV antibiotic. And that seemed to have knocked it out at that time, but that was about 20 years ago.
Okay, all right. Well, it sounds like you got a pretty good course of it. They didn't. They took it seriously. So, you know, there's a lot of literature out there on Lyme that suggests that those, you know, spirochetes and so on live in your body. You know, they stay there and can affect you. You know, is it normal to have arthritis in your knee at age 65? Yes. Is it normal to have aches and pains? Probably. The question is what would you do about it at this point in time? I mean, would you go back on another heavy dose of antibiotics? You know, how debilitating is this?
Well, I hope to keep skiing. I'm going to be 66 before long, and I've got 3 ski trips planned already for this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd say, you know, your best money is spent on some good therapy to keep your legs and hips and your core muscles strong so that you can do that. And whether or not Lyme's is a factor, you know, keeping yourself as strong as possible mechanically has been shown to prolong the life of your joints. So, you know, that's kind of where the smart money is. You know, could it be related to your Lyme's? Possibly, but I'm not sure that they would do anything about it at this point unless you were terribly symptomatic.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. You know, I used to have these aches and pains, little aches and pains all the time. There was always something. And quite some time ago, I started on fish oil for a different reason. It was taken for a different, but after a few months, I realized all those aches and pains mostly were gone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it worked for anybody else, but it certainly helped me.
Yeah. Fish oil is certainly a good supplement for those things.
Dennis in Belleville, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate your show today.
Thank you.
So I was diagnosed with avascular necrosis.
Okay.
And that was after I got beat up by a bull. I'm a dairy farmer.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I had to have a hip replacement. And they were just going to cap the both ends, you know, like Governor Doyle had.
Yep.
But once they started looking at it, it like peeled like an onion, and they had to replace it with like the lolly looking deal, you know, a stem and a ball, and then the cap in my pelvis. So, anyway, is this avascular necrosis is going to be with me for the rest of my life? And what do I have to look forward to, and how can I keep it from, you know, can I do anything to keep it from progressing?
Yeah, what is it? Bill, do you want to explain what it is?
Yeah, it's loss of blood flow to part of the bone, and the hip is a very common location for that. And due to kind of the unique arterial supply, it's more the head of the thigh bone or the femur that gets compromised, and without the blood flow, the bone tissue dies. Dennis, with the type of replacement that you've had, I would assume that the involved area, it's gone, right? It's replaced by the ball and socket.
Well, on that side, but do I have to worry about the other long parts of my bones as well?
You shouldn't. No. You shouldn't. It really is just the what they call the head of the femur, the very top of the femur, that has a compromised a blood supply or a potential for compromised blood flow. The rest of the shaft of the femur, that should be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. You shouldn't have any other problems. It's not a systemic disease. It was a local mechanical problem where the injury you had disrupted the blood flow to the head of the femur. It's a pretty tenuous blood supply, and the injury you had with the bull caused that local mechanical problem. But you shouldn't have any other issues with that and any other joints.
Right. There you go. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.
And Mary in Waukesha, a quick question from you.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a bone scan that identified a facet problem at the L4 and 5. And I've had 2 injections, which haven't been real successful. and I'm wondering if physical therapy might have something to offer for me.
Yes, the facet joints, we have two small joints at the back of our back. You've got the disc in the front and then two facet joints. And they're joints just like our ankle or knee joints, and they can get irritated and inflamed. And the L4-5 area is a relatively common part of the spine for this to occur, causing usually some pretty sharp back pain, especially when you arch your back.
Yeah.
So seeing a physical therapist oftentimes can be helpful. The first phase is to find positions of comfort and exercise that you can do comfortably. But the long-term goal is to increase your arching ability. And so they should be assessing muscle length and strength around your hips, because that ties into spine movement and also core stability. So the answer is yes. If you've not seen a physical therapist for this, you should see one and have them examine you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there some that specialize in this, or anyone could?
Well, I would think any physical therapist should at least get a program started for you. There may be some spine clinics that are close to you where that's all they do. So I guess whatever's most convenient for you location-wise. Physical therapists, we all have training in working with these kinds of issues.
So good luck, Mary, and thank you very much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests, they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Work around the house as well as sports can be great for both body and soul, but without attention to safety, they can lead to aches and pains and sometimes even worse. And when you try to pack too many of those activities in just a couple of weekend days, for example, there's a big risk of overusing muscles. Larry Mueller here. So glad you could join us on the Ideas Network. We're talking today about how to avoid injuries, how to recover from them if they happen anyway. And my guests are physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. And they're here until 12:30 to answer your questions. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And be sure to visit our Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you click like at the page, we'll give you daily updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests. With me in the studio, Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. If you have an ache, a pain, or a sprain or a strain, give us a call. We'll see if we can help you out at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post right there your question. And we have an email from Amy who wanted to know about prolotherapy as a possibility for posterior tibial tendonitis, tendinopathy, when other conservative options haven't shown much improvement. Lori, do you want to?
Oh, prolotherapy. I guess my question would be if she's talked to a practitioner about this. Prolotherapy can be useful in a variety of situations, and basically what they do is they inject a substance into the area to facilitate a healing response. And typically in this area, the prolotherapy is used because the tendon has a vascular supply that's not supposed to be there. There's a hypervascularity that is tending to perpetuate their symptoms, and so they do a prolotherapy injection there to kind of beat back that blood supply. If she hasn't tried any heavy eccentric loading, I'd probably try that before the prolotherapy.
Okay.
Because that's another way to get at the same issue. So, I'd try some of that. I would kind of hold prolotherapy again out there in reserve as the last resort when the other things haven't worked. So
I'm
assuming she's gone through a lot of these other things.
Yep.
But not knowing, I don't know for sure.
Chet in Athens, Wisconsin has a question. Hi, Chet.
Hi. I've been diagnosed with rotocuff tears in both shoulders. And through x-ray, and I'm 70 years old. I'm wondering, should I just live through this, or would surgery be something that I should look forward to as solving my rotocuff tears?
Well, you know, at age 70, let me ask this. Did you have an acute injury where you fell and injured your rotator cuffs, or has this been just progressing?
No, okay. I just
progressing.
Wear and tear. So typically, they're not going to go in and they're not going to repair your rotator cuff. What they tend to do is they go in and they open up the space where your rotator cuff lives to take some of the pressure off of it, because it's typically the inflammation in the area that's giving you your pain. So if they do surgery, they do what's called a decompression to make a little bit more room for the bursa that sits over the rotator cuff and to clean out some of the stuff that might be giving you your pain. So you know, in a best-case scenario, they decrease some of your pain. Typically, before they do that, they would do some injections in your shoulders to see if you're a good candidate, because if they do some injections in your shoulder and you have no response to it, you don't feel any improvement at all, you're not going to be a good surgical candidate, because the injections sort of mimic what's going to happen in surgery. So before I did surgery, I'd want to have those injections. But if you haven't had any therapy for these, physical therapy can help a lot. They can use some strategies to decrease your pain and to increase the strength in the muscles that substitute or support your rotator cuff so that you continue to be functional and take some of the stress off of the rotator cuff itself.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Kelly in Superior, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question regarding the low back. I have stenosis in L4, L5 and S1 are herniated, and I have degenerative disc disease and arthritis in the low back. And I'm looking for any alternative to opioid therapy. I'll try 25 weeks straight of physical therapy, and with maybe 2 weeks of results.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. Kelly, can I ask you, is the most painful area, is it your back or is it your legs?
Typically just low back.
Okay. And in the legs, any numbness or weakness?
Some numbness down in the feet, but not through the legs.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So long, I don't know.
Okay. Got it. All right. Well, you know, the stenosis means narrowing, and so the space for the nerves is not adequate. And so there's pressure on nerves, and that can result in leg pain as well as the numbness and tingling and potentially weakness. 25 weeks of physical therapy is a long time, and I'm assuming that what they tried with you is core stabilization, maybe some traction to unload or unweight that area, as well as with some stretching of the hips.
Yes.
That all sounds familiar?
Yeah, the stretching of the hips was normally every day that I got off the table after the stretching of the hips.
Mm-hmm.
Would almost fall down because the pain would shoot down my leg immediately.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'd be all right.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, I think from conservative care, I mean, that's what a physical therapist can offer. Have you tried any kind of a splint or a brace?
No.
Okay. That's something that may help with the back pain. I've had some people try it and wear a brace for even 3 to 4 months, and if that helps, actually your back should actually feel stiffer, but it should be less painful. And once you're dealing primarily with stiffness, then you slowly, gradually start working on regaining your flexibility along with core stabilization. But there's a lot of strengthening that can be done where more isometrically where your back is not moving, which you should tolerate really very, very well. But it may be worth trying a brace. It's be more of a solid brace, not a soft wraparound Velcro brace. You want something that is going to immobilize you and let yourself get stiffer, but with the idea that the pain should be getting less and less over time.
Okay.
And that may be worth a try, considering everything else you've had done.
Absolutely.
Who would provide that?
You probably need to go through a physician and have it prescribed for you. If there's a local hospital, and they would send you to an orthotist who would fit you for the brace.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
We still use my exercise ball, all my core muscle exercises, my inversion table, and nothing works. So,
okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Then, I mean, it sounds like you've done all the right things. And so I guess this would be a different tack. And now just immobilize it as best they can with a brace for really 3 to 4 months. And then slowly start weaning yourself off the brace as you continue on with your program.
Good luck. Thank you, Kelly, for calling. Appreciate it.
You appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm. Lenny in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Lenny.
Hi. I have on my left foot, when I walk, after about 10 or 15 minutes, my fourth and third toe start to get this sharp pain right in the center. And I can't walk, and if I wiggle my toes a little, it seems to go away, but then it comes back again.
Sharp toe pain.
Is this relatively recent?
And it's been going on for about two weeks.
Okay.
2 months, I'm sorry.
Okay.
2 months.
Any idea what brought it on?
Well, before that, I had, pain in my back toe.
Your back toe.
I mean, hang on 1 second. Okay. I was having some pain, not pain, but, like, movement in my back heel. When I would walk, it felt like something was moving back there. And then that kind of went away, and then now my toe starts to hurt.
Well, you know, one of the more common things that happens around your third and fourth toe is a neuroma. I don't know how it would be related to the issue of the movement in the back of your foot. Then after 10 or 15 minutes, then if you sit down, does it go away?
Yeah, it'll go away.
Okay. Yeah, I'd probably go in and have this looked at. Since it seems to be a progressive issue from something else, it could be that, you know, when you started having this sensation in the back of your foot, you subtly changed the way you walked, and now you've created a second problem. So I think it'd be worthwhile to have your foot looked at, to look at some of the biomechanics of your foot and see if an orthotic would help you, if you need some of the kind of arch supports or exercises or a change of shoe wear. Or if there's something farther up going on at your hip or knee that needs to be addressed that's causing this increased stress down in your foot. Sometimes there's a leg length difference. Sometimes it's posturally how you stand and you're not even aware of it. So I think figuring out where this is coming from and directing the intervention there makes the most sense right now.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Annie. And Danny and DePere, on to you now. Hi.
Hi, thanks for the show. I've got a pain in the right foot. It's on the ball right underneath the big toe. And it's not a pain that occurs when I put pressure on it, when I walk, run. It's always when I get off of my feet after doing something. And it's not a consistent pain. It's kind of, the pain feels like how a bell curve would look. Dull, sharp, then dull again, all in the span of about 5-6 seconds.
Underneath the ball of your big toe?
Yes.
Yeah, it's probably a sesamoid issue. It says underneath your big toe there are two small floating bones called sesamoids. It could be a sesamoiditis, or it could be it could be arthritis in the joint of your big toe, but it doesn't typically follow that kind of pattern that you just described. So after you get off of it, how long does it hurt? Just for those brief few seconds?
Yeah, maybe 5-6 seconds.
And then it's gone?
Yep.
Hmm. Yeah, it's probably more likely related to your sesamoids than anything else. I mean, you can sometimes when people place excessive weight on that ball of their foot, if they're flat-footed or if their foot mechanics are such that they place extra stress on that joint, it can flare up those little bones. And okay. So what you do is you get an orthotic that redistributes the weight more evenly across the bottom of your foot and takes some of the stress off of that joint itself.
Okay.
Yeah. But if it's only lasting 5 or 6 seconds and you're not getting symptoms when you're doing anything, you know, you could just watch it for a while and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more of an annoying thing than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thanks, okay. Danny. Appreciate the call. And an email from Al. I'm a 52-year-old runner having a knee issue. It's been stiff all week, but I just ran through it. And Saturday had a great 10-mile run, but later in the day I could hardly get up and downstairs. The knee was sore around the calf, and the back of my leg is tender and swollen. This morning the knee's a little better, but the back of the leg is about the same. Amazingly, it still does not hurt to run. My impulse is to run through it by backing off my mileage a bit, but I don't want to get laid up for a long time. Never really had a serious injury running and sure don't want to start now.
How long did you say how long it's been going on?
Just in the last week, it appears to be just very recently.
Huh. And swelling behind the knee? Is that what it said, behind the knee?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, well, if it's in the knee joint itself, you know, it sounds like, you know, a cartilage tear of some sort, a degenerative tear of the cartilage or something like that. I mean, it's not atypical that with an arthritis, something like that, that you can run and still be active. The joint likes to move.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of get that runner's high going, and you don't really notice it. But when you stop and then it swells, it's really painful. I would not run through this.
Okay.
I'd go in and have it looked at. Because he's just asking for trouble. I mean, sometimes you have pains and you know, you can watch them and let them go. But when they're associated with swelling, that's one of those signs that your joint is telling you that something is wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. There we go. Mary and Merrill, it's on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Yeah. Yes. I have PAD, peripheral artery disease, and I was told to walk a good deal. So I walk half an hour every morning, and I'm wondering what is the outlook for this.
Okay.
It's getting more painful and sort of stiff.
Okay. Yeah, peripheral arterial disease, so there's decreased blood flow through the arteries down into the tissues in the lower leg, including muscles. And oftentimes the walking is what's painful because there's not enough blood flow to the muscle groups.
Yeah.
The outlook is it's dependent on actually on a number of things. And sort of one, what has caused this? And, you know, sometimes it's associated with conditions like diabetes, or it can be associated with atherosclerotic changes in terms of cholesterol and high blood pressure. You know, so the underlying cause, that needs to be treated as well as possible with your medical doctor through medications and other things. Activity is important. You hope that you can build up some new circulation to the area. And so one of the ways that we promote is that people, they walk to the point of some pain, they walk a little bit further, then they stop and rest, and then they walk again. And so Mary, if, you know, if your day is set up where you could do this even 3-4 times a day, so not walking to the point where you're in so much pain that you're suffering for an hour or two, but walk into the pain a little bit further, stop and rest, and then repeat that again and then again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, hopefully the walking will build up over time. But you need really good footwear. You need to monitor your skin so you're not getting any skin breakdown, no blisters or open sores.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you need to call your physician right away.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck, Mary. Thank you very much for calling. And Tom in Nelson, Wisconsin. On to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
About 2 years ago, I suffered a slight shoulder separation between the clavicle and scapula. There was no rotator cuff problem whatsoever. And about six, 8 months ago now, I've started doing some more weight training and whatnot and whatnot, and I seem to be aggravating the problem. I don't know which exercises, machines, whatnot to avoid or which to use that will help the help the separation. Right now my shoulder hurts, and it seems like I'm working on the machines. I'm doing chest presses, flies, at the bicep, tricep curls, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know which ones are hurting and which ones are helping.
Okay, that's a really good question. Typically with the shoulder separation, anything overhead is going to be painful. And I'm expecting the chest press is probably painful because it places a lot of load on that joint. Anything that crosses over the midline of your body is also going to be a problem for that. So if did you join a gym?
It's sort of. It's called Cardiac Rehab Center, but I'm in there because I'm an at-risk patient.
Okay.
Previous caller with peripheral artery disease, that's what I have.
Oh, okay. So there should be somebody there who's knowledgeable about weight training who can go through those exercises with you. But you should be on a program that has specific rotator cuff exercises to keep your rotator cuff strong, and those include things like shoulder rotations and arm lifts that are only to shoulder height. But doing things like the chest press and the flies are going to be hard on it too. But both those things work the front of the shoulder, that work the chest. A lot of times people with the separations and rotator cuff problems need to work the back of the shoulder. And so the rowing is good. You know, triceps are good as long as you're keeping below shoulder height. And then some rotator cuff exercises and things like reverse flies.
Right.
So
that's going from the front to the back, basically.
Exactly.
Reverse fly is good. Reverse fly is good, but not the front fly.
Right. At least for now. And you might be able to work your way into those with some lighter weights, but the machines generally dictate that you start with a certain poundage, and they also dictate the range that you move through.
Yeah, and I'm an old jock, and I go 110%.
Right.
I push it as hard as I can.
Right. So you're probably better off with free weights where you can control the range that you work through.
Okay.
Tom, one of the things that may help indirectly with these kinds of issues, the more flexibility you can gain through the rib cage and middle back area, it takes some of the stress off that shoulder joint. So if where you're going, if you have access to a foam roller or an exercise ball where you can do some mid-back stretching, arching backward over the foam roller or lying on your side and kind of arching over it, you may gain a little bit of mobility that way. So, again, less stress falls on that joint.
Okay. I'll give it a shot. I'll lay off some of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. And Clay wondered if you could talk about frozen shoulder. Came to him out of the blue a year ago, 6 weeks of PT, and was given exercise to address limited range of motion. Still troubled by it, and has now gone to my other shoulder.
Frozen shoulder, idiopathic. We don't know what causes it in most cases. It just kind of creeps up on you, and there is a high rate of bilateral. Well, there are basically two different camps on this. Those who believe that vigorous therapy will help you get over this faster, and those who believe it's going to take you 18 months to get over this regardless of what you do. The bottom line is you have to have a good home program that you're diligent with and that you do every day and you stick with it. And eventually you will get to the thaw phase where you start to loosen up. Touching base with a physical therapist over time as you pass through the different phases of the frozen shoulder can help give you some guidance about the right dosage of exercises to do in your home program. But really, that doing the exercises at home is going to be what sustains you to get you through this.
And, Lori, the natural history seems to be, about 18 months?
Yep, about 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, on that happy note, get better, Lori.
Yes, I will.
Thanks, and happy holidays to you.
Thanks to you.
And to you as well, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next year.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
We will see them both next year. Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault with the Bill with the UW School of Medicine, Public Health. Lori, of course, with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. They do a great job for us, and they're going to do it again next year, too. So we're glad for that. Tomorrow, Lori Bessler from the Historical Society will share some tips for getting relatives talking about family history over the holidays. And then Lou Friedman talks about the history of the World Lumberjack Championships. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.